Chapter 2. Marius. July 1. Earth.
Marius!
I was thrust awake by the house-shaking sound of Mom bellowing from downstairs.
Marius, get out of bed. You'll be late for soccer, she shouted again.
I was still shaking from my nightmare and barely squeaked out,
I'll be right down, Mom. Don't call me Marius. You know I want to be called Mark.
Have you ever had a dream so vivid that you remember it as though it were real, but then it begins to fade second by second? Well, this wasn't like that. I woke up terrified that Soul Reapers were going to get me, and the memory didn't fade. In fact, I still don't seem to be forgetting the dream at all. The other strange thing about this dream was the perspective. Sometimes the way I dream is like watching a movie. But this one was like I was in it. I mean, I guess I wasn't really in it, but it was like I was watching it through Staven's eyes. The experience was spooky, but cool. I couldn't stop thinking about going back, even though I was scared. But it was morning, and it was my birthday, so I had to get up. Excuse me, let me introduce myself. My name is Marius Panagopoulos. What parents give their kid a name like that? It's awful. And I decided I was tired of being called Mary, or the kids saying, will you marry us, Panagopoulos? So last year, I decided to call myself Mark after I graduated sixth grade and moved to a new school. I live in Cincinnati, Ohio. Today is my 13th birthday, and this is my first entry in the new diary my parents gave me as a present. What parents give their kid a journal for a birthday present? Mom says it'll help my writing skills if I write in it every day. I say, you mean you want me to write in it every day, even in the summer? Dad says, listen to your mother. Look, I'm a good student. I'm great at math. I love to read, but I hate to write. I just never know what to say, and everything comes out jumbled when I try to write it down. Do you want to know the worst part, though? You can't even tear out the pages in this stupid diary. Whatever you write stays there forever. The only good part is that Mom agrees that diaries are personal. That means that nobody can read it except me, and I can write whatever I want. The pages get kind of wrinkly when you write on them, so she can check that I'm writing without actually seeing what I wrote. So why am I writing all this instead of just drawing pictures of things like zombie attacks and dragons on every page? Good question. You see, Mom and Dad let me open this present before soccer, and I was so mad that I even got a yellow card for yelling at Amy Stiltman in the game, although she thoroughly deserved it. I had decided to merely scribble in the pages by the end of soccer when my best friend Malik made an unexpected remark. I had just told my three closest friends about last night's spectacular dream while we were eating snacks on the sideline after the game, and Malik said, "Dude, you should write it down so you don't forget it." I'm doomed. It's been 3 weeks, and Mom is mad at me. I wrote a little bit of my dream in the diary every day for the first week, but haven't written anything since. She says that I need to write every day. I say, I have nothing to write about. Dad says, just write about what you're doing. That's the whole problem, though. My life is boring. I go to soccer, hang out with my friends, and play fantasy board games with Malik, Ethan, and Tyler. We just got a new one, Wizard Spells, and it is cool, but what am I going to write about that in a diary? I guess I could write about soccer. Our team was slaughtered today. Woohoo! We were playing against the Pink Strikers. A boutique sponsors them, and their team captain, Nancy Wellington, picked the name. Funny thing is that everyone tries to get on that team, even though they have to wear pink jerseys. You see, Nancy is a beast. I don't mean that she looks like a beast. Nancy's kind of pretty, but she is strong, fast, and has impressive ball skills. One time they scored because she kicked the ball so hard that Ethan, our goalie, fell over into the goal when he caught it. The rest of the game wasn't much better. It's kind of hard to tease a team about wearing pink jerseys when they are undefeated. Tonight, though, we have a sleepover at Tyler's house. Maybe something will happen, or I'll have another dream. I haven't had another one like that one back in June, and the guys are getting tired of me talking about it. Tyler says it's just my brain making up things based upon the board games we play. Malik suggested that maybe my mind was astral projecting to an alien world. He told me to look at the stars to try to figure out where I was the next time I go. I like Malik's idea, and I'm going to do that, if I ever get the chance, but I'm starting to think that perhaps Tyler's right. Maybe it was just a fantastic dream. July 20th, Mirth.
Hey, look! A unicorn! Steven exclaimed as a unicorn crashed across their path.
The other troops marching alongside glared at him. Sorry, muttered Steven before sub-vocalizing.
Shut up, Mark! I can't afford to be fired from this gig.
Sorry, thought Mark, but did you see that? A unicorn just ran across the road.
Yeah, for the 40th time today, and watch our step.
Unicorn poop may be rainbow-colored, but it doesn't smell like strawberries, and you don't want to get it on your boots, grumbled Steven. Where have you been for the past month? And more importantly, why are you back? I've been back living my life, thought Mark. I only get here when I dream, and I don't seem to have any control over when I come.
But it's great to be back. What happened with the Soul Reapers?
Yeah, it's just lovely having you back, kid, thought Steven. I don't know what happened with the Soul Reapers. I felt them touch my shoulders, close my eyes, and then you and they were all gone. I figured they had taken you and left me. I did feel a little bad for you, though. What happened?
I just woke up, admitted Mark. And then I couldn't get back here, no matter how hard I tried. I was starting to think it was just a dream.
No such luck, kid, but you have to be cool this time. I had to sneak out of town in the middle of the night after our last adventure, and I can never go back there again. Losing the house kind of stinks, because it has been in my family for generations, but those farmers are never going to forgive the damage that chicken caused, and I will never be able to pay for it. I used some connections with a nearby kingdom to get this security job. We're escorting the daughter of a wealthy family on a road trip, and I'll be in deep trouble if I screw it up. So please be quiet. Mark looked around and realized that they were part of a company of a dozen soldiers marching alongside a fancy carriage pulled by a centaur.
Hey, Steven, is that a centaur pulling that carriage? Thought Mark.
Steven sighed and thought, yeah, and please keep quiet. As you might recall, centaurs and I do not get along. We are having a heck of a time keeping this one focused on pulling the carriage instead of chasing after cute unicorns, so I don't need you to point them out. Mark did his best to keep quiet as they marched through the forest, but it was difficult. The vegetation on this planet didn't look much different than back home, but the pavers in the road glimmered, and the animals were incredible. They saw a herd of unicorns in the distance, which drove the centaur crazy. There were dozens of magical squirrels, colorful birds that looked like they were on fire, and thousands of sparkling specks of light that Steven explained were wood fairies. I'm sorry, Mark finally broke down and thought. Excuse me, but what are those giants called who have been watching us?
What giants?
Oh, the two crouching by the side of the road ahead of us, and the other one off to our right. Steven quickly looked around and shouted, Trolls! Three gigantic trolls immediately stepped out of the shadows and charged the group. The centaur stood frozen and started to pee, like one of those statue fountains, while the soldiers formed a protective circle around the carriage. The captain sent two troops to attack the closest troll, and they were tossed dozens of yards away with one brush of the troll's massive arm. Each troll had to be over 30 feet tall and looked like a cross between a grizzly bear and a gorilla. Nobody knew why these trolls wanted the girl or the carriage, but everybody realized there was no way 10 soldiers were going to stop them. Suddenly, Steven, the centaur, the girl, and the captain realized they were the only ones left, as the other soldiers fled down the road behind them. The captain was bound to stay by honor and duty, the centaur and the girl were bound to the carriage, and Steven was bound by the fact that his legs didn't seem to want to move. Then, without warning, Mark dropped Steven to one knee and reached down with curled fingers as though he was going to dig in the dirt. He stood, raising his hands high above his head, and as he did, a smooth, shimmering, translucent wall rose 50 feet high around the troll to their right. The two trolls on the road paused as they heard their friend banging against the wall of energy and watched sparks erupt from its blows. Then they turned, roared, and raced towards Steven. Mark never took his eyes off them as he brought his hands to his chest height, drew his elbows back, and began to hum. His whole body began to glow and vibrate until he thrust his hands forward towards the two trolls, causing a brilliant yellow ball of fire to shoot towards them. A moment later, they were just not there.
"What was that?"
shouted Steven in spite of himself. "I don't know," Mark thought. "My friends and I sometimes act out the fantasy board games we play, and that's how I imagined it would work."
"Those were trolls," answered the captain, who did not know about Mark. "And that was amazing."
"Certainly was," agreed the young woman, peering out of the carriage window at Steven. She was smiling and starting to say, "My name is..." Then she stopped, and her expression turned to terror. Steven saw the same expressions on the captain, the centaur, and didn't need to ask why. He simply said, "Get her out of here and safely home as quickly as possible." The captain leaped upon the carriage, and the centaur galloped off faster than Steven had ever seen a centaur move. He felt a hand on his shoulder and knew they weren't escaping the Soul Reaper this time. He saw bony, blood-red fingers grasp his tunic, and the world went black. Somewhere underground. Steven opened his eyes and studied his surroundings. They were in a dark, musty room carved out of solid rock. There were iron bars along the open side with a flickering light providing the only illumination from around the corner. "Oh, Mars, I'm in a dungeon," Steven muttered to himself.
"I'm still here. This is so cool," he shouted a minute later. "Mark, keep it quiet," he hissed to himself. "I'm sorry, man, but I thought it was all going to be over when the Soul Reaper grabbed us," Mark whispered.
"There's something seriously wrong with you, Mark," Steven sighed. "You're happy to be locked in a jail cell in a dungeon. We need to talk later." Yeah, admitted Mark. "So how are we going to get out of here?"
"I don't know," Steven replied. Then he walked over to the grate, shook it, and shouted, "Hey, let me out!"
A teenage boy, who looked to be about Mark's age, appeared from around the corner and walked over to the bars.
"Well, look at the heroes sent to save the world. You're a little late, aren't you?"
he sniggered. Steven/Mark stared at him in disbelief before Steven said,
"I have no idea what you're talking about, but unlock this gate and let us out of here right now, you little prick."
"Let yourselves out," answered the boy with a mean smile. "I don't have a key." Then he fished an apple out from under his cloak, thrust it through the bars, and asked, "Want an apple?"
"No, I don't want an apple," screamed Steven. "I want you to go find someone with a key."
"I have no idea who would have a key to that door, or even if one exists," answered the boy. "But here comes Mr. Urtesh. If anyone knows where to find a key, it would be him." The boy walked away as an older man came around the corner.
"What's all the noise down here, Janice?" Urtesh grumbled.
Then he saw Steven in the cell and added, "Oh, I see. Our missing colleagues have finally arrived. You two should know that I value punctuality and that this is far beyond acceptable tardiness. Now, come along."
Urtesh turned and began walking away until Steven called out, "Can you please let us out, Urtesh?"
Urtesh paused and turned to look at him. "The name is Mr. Urtesh, young man, and didn't Janice explain that there is no key? You should let yourselves out. Just grasp the handle, turn it, and push the door open." As Steven opened the unlocked door, he saw Janice grin and heard Urtesh mutter, "Add diminished capacity to the shortcomings of this candidate," as he walked away. Mark thought to Steven, "I don't like that kid." Steven thought back, "I don't much care for either one of them," and followed the man and the boy out of the room. They walked down a small, rough-hewn rock hallway before entering the largest room Steven had ever seen. They were not in a dungeon after all. They were underground in a cave. This room had a high, domed ceiling and could comfortably seat 100 or more people. There were various frames, pieces of wood, and broken cutouts of people lying around on the floor as if the place had been used for some crazy performance and then hastily abandoned. Urtesh and Janice ignored all this as Urtesh walked over to a small card table with a couple of folding chairs set up in a corner, and Janice wandered outside. There were boxes filled with papers scattered on the floor near the makeshift desk. Urtesh sat in a chair behind a table, pulled out a form, and waved Steven into a folding chair across from him.
"Host name," he grunted without looking up.
Excuse me? Asked Steven. "What is your name, young man?" repeated Urtesh.
Stephen, sir, answers Stephen. Age? 17.
Delayed development, muttered Urtish as he scribbled on the form. Rate your magical abilities on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 being none and 10 being an all-powerful wizard.
I guess a 5? Said Stephen with an unsure tone.
Urtish raised his eyes and glared at him.
Okay, maybe a 2, admitted Stephen. But I did some amazing work today, he quickly added.
That was your visitor, said Urtish as he wrote and muttered, diminished magical ability.
And what is your visitor's name?
Excuse me, what do you mean by my visitor's name? Asked Stephen.
Oh, do try to keep up, grouched Urtish. You are conjoined with someone from another world. His mind enters yours while he is asleep and dreaming in his world. He has no memories of this place whenever he awakens in his world, but remembers everything whenever his mind returns here. So, what is the name of the voice in your head? Or you can just let him speak, and perhaps we'll get through this faster.
Mark was thinking that this portion of his dream was not as much fun as the part with the unicorns, dragons, and trolls. He wanted to correct Mr. Urtish about his ability to remember his dreams, but merely replied, "My name is Mark, sir."
"And how old are you, Mark?"
13.
"Age mismatch," Urtish sighed as he continued to write on the form. "And what do you want to use as your combined name?"
"Combined name?"
"Yes, Stephen is the name of the host. Mark is the name of the visitor. What would you like us to call the two of you when you are together?"
Urtish rolled his eyes. It was apparent that he had gone through this process many times in the past without this much trouble. People typically combine their two names to create a different name for their conjoined entity. That way, we have a name for the host, one for the visitor, and one for the combination.
"So what are your names?" asked Mark.
"None of your business. All you need to know is that my conjoined name is Mr. Urtish. Now, would you rather be called Stark or Marvin?"
"Neither one," shouted Mark. "Marvin is even worse than Marius."
"And who is Marius?" asked Urtish with raised eyebrows.
"Marius is my real name," answered Mark.
"Well, why didn't you say so?" grumbled Urtish as he fished around for an eraser. He began correcting the form and asked, "So, how about Stavius?"
"Awesome!" exclaimed Mark. "That sounds like a Roman gladiator."
"What's a Roman gladiator?" asked Stephen.
"A warrior who was fed to the lions for entertainment," answered Urtish with a wry smile.
"It's perfect."